Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott, in for Marty Moscowane. During a highly charged and emotional meeting yesterday, Philadelphia's School Reform Commission voted to close 23 schools and merge or relocate five others. Opponents of the plan got to voice their opinions one more time and made passionate pleas to save their schools. WHYY's education reporter Ben Harold was at the meeting last night and joins us here in the studio to update us on the latest. Ben, thank you so much for being here.
Good morning, Mike, and good to be here.
And joining us on the phone is School District of Philadelphia Superintendent William Height Jr., who will be with us for about 15 minutes. And Superintendent, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And Ben, we will get to William Height in just a moment, but give us a recap of yesterday's events, very dramatic, and then the highly charged voting process.
There have been a lot of wild days in Philadelphia education over the past few years, but I think yesterday was the most emotional day in recent memory. It started in the late afternoon with a rally of several hundred teachers, parents, and activists outside school district headquarters. A group of protesters tried to bar the School Reform Commission from entering school district auditorium to prevent them from voting on schools. They felt that public education in the city is under attack, and they wanted to make a show of resistance. 19 people were ultimately arrested. The School Reform Commission went on to vote. They heard testimony from over 30 people pleading for their schools, making the case that this was uninformed and not wise, and repeating their calls for a moratorium. The School Reform Commission went ahead anyway and voted. 28 proposals altogether came up for a vote. 23 schools were closed. Five more relocated or merged. By the end of the meeting, 1 in 10 Philadelphia schools was put on was given its notice that it will no longer be open by next fall.
Which schools were spared?
Well, two elementary schools, T.M. Pierce and Bayard Taylor, both in North Philadelphia, were voted to stay open. Also, Roosevelt Middle School in Germantown and Paul Robeson High in West Philadelphia.
Now, Superintendent Height, let me turn to you. What's your take on yesterday's emotional day and the voting process?
Well, it was an emotional day, and it's been an emotional process. We started with our original set of recommendations in December. I believe it was December 13th, where we recommended 37 schools to close after a lot of community meetings that we held in and around the district and the city. We amended that to 29, and as you indicated earlier, the School Reform Commission then voted on 23. And so that this whole process has been a very emotional process, and it's never easy to have a conversation about schools that are closing, because these schools represent institutional knowledge and institutional experiences for many of our families and many of our communities.
Now, the big question that kept coming up, in addition to why my school, was why now? Why does this have to happen now? Why can we not wait another year and really discuss this in more detail?
Well, and we are at a crisis point, and we're at a crisis point in the district. And last year we borrowed $300 million just to meet this year's operating budget. We no longer have the ability to do that. And so now we're faced with not just the decision around school closures, but quite a few decisions, all very difficult. And all of those things must occur in order for us to really continue to be a viable option as a school district. And that's the crisis part of this. And so without additional revenue, the only thing that we can control is spending. And that is what we're attempting to do with not just the school closure conversation, but we are asking for concessions from employees. We are trying to get rid of property. We have a number of things that are occurring for us to really try to close this budget deficit.
But speaking of the money aspect of all of this, can we be sure that this will ultimately save the district money, especially in the first year?
No, it was, and we had always indicated that it would take some investments in order to make sure that we were also displaying urgency around improving schools. And so we were always planning to have a set of investments, and so the savings especially associated with the school closures in year one, was almost a break even because there were one-time costs associated with the investments that are necessary in order to make the receiving schools better schools than the schools that would be closing.
Now, we've talked about the emotional side of all this, and Benjamin Harold, our reporter here in studio, was at the meeting last night and has this testimony from kindergarten teacher Deborah Perry, who made a very emotional plea to save her school, Taylor Elementary in North Philadelphia. Let's hear that.
What I want to say to you, and what is not part of the facts and figures, is what is at the heart of Taylor School. Taylor is our home away from home. We are a family. You won't find Taylor School in the evening news much or in the newspapers. Taylor School is a place of quiet love. Like a family, we stand together, always united in our love for our students. In 27 years, I'm still impressed and amazed by the acts of love committed by our staff for our kids.
And Benjamin Harrell, just one of many very emotional voices.
And Superintendent Height, I was curious to hear your take. I mean, sitting at the meeting last night, we heard, again, from over 30 speakers and many protesters and lots of folks who were very passionate about making one last case to save their schools. And the commissioners at the front of the room really wrestled with the difficult decisions before them. But for the most part, it looked like a chance for you to just listen. And I wanted to know, you know, what did you hear at Taylor Elementary and other schools? What was going through your mind as you heard people like Deborah Perry make their case?
And as you know, Ben, we've been in a lot of individuals who spoke last night have also spoken at one or more of the meetings that we've had in and around the communities. And so we had heard a lot of similar pleas when we started this process. And every time we talk specifically about a school, these are very challenging conversations and very difficult testimonies to listen to. But once again, one of the things that we are trying to do is improve the educational outcomes of all students, but we have to be a district that is financially sustainable. And the other thing that I think is equally important, and this is not an affront to any of the schools that were being represented last night, but we have to have an equal conversation about schools that are not serving children. And those schools that have historically had low student achievement, we have to address those places as well. And so schools that are declining in enrollment and have a lower than what is expected student outcomes, we have to take a hard look at all of those.
I wanted to ask you about a specific example and tell us if you could walk us through both your and your team's decision-making process around this. University City High School last night was one of the more controversial votes. It ended up being 3-2 in favor of closing the school. But for months, we had heard from students, from staff, from the school, parents, and residents of the surrounding community who had really made both a passionate plea, not just to save their school, but to find a way to make it work differently, recognizing that the building wasn't in great shape. Commissioner Dworetsky last night talked about University City as a promise academy that had received extra investment and attention from the district and wondered why pull the plug now on a school where good things were starting to happen. The district had made this extra commitment, and there was a group of students and staff and parents who were willing to kind of find an alternative.
Yeah, and that speaks to the problem that we're wrestling with. And yes, it was designated long before my arrival as a Promise Academy, but unfortunately, the school was still declining in enrollment. They have shown some achievement gains over the past. They're nowhere near where we think a school like that should be. And they have, they're at 20% capacity. And that's a very large building that needs almost $30 million in repair work. Students aren't achieving at the level that we think they should be. The building is, for the most part, empty. And so that was some SRC members voted against the proposal to close that. We have been working, as you indicated, with the students and with the staff there to allow those students to travel as a group to any number of receiving schools. And so we've been working and will continue to work with them, the principal over there, some of the teachers, and many of the students.
Now, this is Superintendent William Hite Jr., School District of Philadelphia. We're talking about the future of public schools, and we only have you for a few more minutes, Superintendent, so I want to get some more questions in. What is the timeline of all of this? What's next, basically?
So one of the things that we will do now is immediately turn to a process to open schools. And this is no longer a conversation about closing schools, but now we are beginning to talk about how do we shape plans for every single school and determine what these students and what these schools will open with, ensuring that they're safe environments and ensuring that students have resources that may or may not have existed in the schools where they're currently attending. And so part of the work that will occur between now and next fall is making preparation for each of these schools. And so at the school specifically, we're going to have principals begin to reach out to the parents and the families of students who will be attending. They will also be coordinating actions with the administrators at the sending schools, and we'll begin a process for providing the families and the students with opportunities to get into those schools before the beginning of the school year.
Superintendent Hite, you faced a lot, the district faced a lot of questions and criticism for not necessarily having all of the details that parents and students and staff wanted about exactly the nuts and bolts of how these transitions would take place. What assurances can you give folks that given the district's limited resources and having downsized so dramatically staff-wise in recent years, that the district is going to be able to manage this many transitions on such a short turnaround?
Just about a minute left, Superintendent.
Oh, thank you. So, yeah, and in fact, that's one of the reasons why we were trying to do this in the month of March. It actually provides us with a little more time than what we've had in the past in order to begin and put these transitions in place. And so we have now working groups that will be focused on each school individually, and now we know who those children are, so we know what types of resources and supports they should have.
We have about 30 seconds left, but what do you think the impact will be on the kids in the schools that will be closed for the rest of the year? This is very disruptive to their learning.
Yes, you're right, and I'm going to have a meeting very shortly with the principals of those schools, and we're going to talk about maintaining a learning environment this year so that we don't begin to lose students who think because their schools are closing that the year has ended. And so part of this is, as adults, all of us having an expectation that students will continue to achieve during this year.
All right, that's School District of Philadelphia Superintendent William Hite Jr. Thank you so much for joining us. I know it was a very long night for you, so we appreciate that. Coming up, more conversation with WHYY's education reporter Benjamin Harold and your phone calls at 1-888-477-9499. You're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, Athena Health, offering physicians a dinner seminar on how to best manage the challenges of health care payment reform, Tuesday, March 12th at Revel. Details at athenahealth.com/NJNPR.
Supporting WHYY, the Academy of Vocal Arts, presents Don Quixote, March 2nd through 9th, in AVA's Helen Corning Warden Theater, and March 12th and 14th at Centennial Hall in Haverford. Jules Massenet's opera is a lyrical ode to the chivalrous idealist Don Quixote. Christopher Makatsouris conducts the AVA Opera Orchestra, with staging by Tito Capobianco. 215-735-1685 or avaopera.org.
I'm Jesse Thorne. You know, the experience that pushes some performers towards show business happens early. Take Aisha Tyler.
Imagine, if you will, being 6 feet tall by third grade, so essentially being like a living maypole. By the way, kids did dance around me in a circle, but it also made me relatively confident, which is weird because I guess I just felt like nothing worse gonna happen than this.
This week on Bullseye from PRI.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, the Lincoln Motor Company, introducing the 2013 MKZ Hybrid, a luxury car with an EPA-estimated 45 city miles per gallon. More at Lincoln.com. Actual mileage may vary.
And welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moskowain. We're talking about Philadelphia's plan to close 23 schools and to merge and relocate five others. Joining us in the studio is WHYY's education reporter, Benjamin Harold. He has been reporting on this for us here at WHYY in our partnership with the Public School Notebook, and we thank them for all their wonderful reporting as well. We were just joined by Superintendent William Height Jr., who had to go on to the next meeting, and I want to listen, Ben, to a cut that you captured last night. Here is Chairman Pedro Ramos, who explains the SRC's position after yesterday's emotional meeting where those votes took place, which schools were going to get closed. Here it is.
I think the SRC, the new SRC, has tried to take the position that we need to stabilize the district so we can strengthen it going forward instead of perpetuating just limping along. And I think what we would have done if we had tried to delay this is we would have ensured that next year less dollars were going to the classroom and more dollars were going to empty space.
So Ben, take us back. How were the schools that are ultimately going to be closed, how were they picked? Money is obviously a big motivating factor. What else?
I think we saw really two things, two main forces converging in the district's decision-making here. On one hand, they talked a lot about having 53,000 empty seats throughout their school buildings across the city. And really, they were looking at buildings that were half empty or more, where there was really low so-called utilization rates, where they were paying a lot of money to heat and maintain and staff buildings that weren't being fully used. They also looked at the quality of the buildings. Many of the buildings and school buildings in Philadelphia were built 100 years ago, 90 years ago, need dramatic repairs, and feeling like if they could downsize and consolidate their physical infrastructure, that could help with some of the budget problems over the long haul. And then they also wanted to look at things like academics and, you know, where if there was an opportunity to send kids to schools that would be, you know, at worst, no worse than the schools that they were leaving. And so I think what happened was you had this need to address the declining enrollment in the school district and the aging infrastructure, but at the same time trying to find a plan where the details actually made sense and where you were doing no harm with the actual recommendations was where things got really tricky. And so originally, as Superintendent Height said, you know, he recommended that there would be 37 schools closed after a community process that was whittled down to 27 schools with two added on to the list. And then last night, vote, the School Reform Commission took a few more schools off the list. So I think what we saw was that there was a wide recognition that something needed to be done, but trying to figure out what exactly the details of what should be done was really difficult.
And I want to invite our callers to join us as well at 1-888-477-9499. If you have a kid in the school district, are a teacher, or are concerned in general, give us a call and let us know what you are thinking about. And Ben, this closing of schools, of neighborhood schools, is happening all over the country, maybe most dramatically in Chicago.
Yeah, we just heard from Chicago that they're looking at closing 80 schools, and they've closed over 100 over the past 10 years. And I think what we've seen again and again is that that there are questions about what are the benefits of this. Is it really saving the money that people think it's going to save, and is it leading to better educational opportunities and better academic outcomes for students? There's not a lot of research on this. It is a relatively new phenomenon at this scale, but there are a lot of serious questions about whether it's worth it.
And we do have a caller. Stephanie Levine is joining us on the phone. She is with Research for Action. Stephanie, are you with us?
I am.
Stephanie, so you work with a nonprofit organization that researches education. Can you fill us in on what we do know about the savings or not that come after school closings?
Absolutely. So we've done some research on school closings and considered the district's plan based on this research. And we found that there are certainly long-term savings to be had from school closings, but there's very little research that speaks to short-term savings. And much of the savings that are achieved with reductions in staffing, teachers, and support staff, and that's not in the plan for the district right now.
And Stephanie, if I might jump in, this is Ben Harold, the education reporter here at WHYY. I know Research for Action also took a look at whether the 14,000 or so Philadelphia students who are going to be relocated or reassigned as part of this process would be going to schools that are better, worse, or the same. What did you guys find on that?
That's true. We found that research suggests clearly that school closings may hinder and they rarely help students' academic progress, but this is largely driven by the capacity of receiving schools to serve students well. And positive effects are more likely when displaced students are sent to schools with higher average achievement levels. So Research for Action's analysis of Philadelphia's closings and receiving schools reveals that at least in some cases, students may be transferred to lower or comparably performing schools based on standardized achievement data and AYP determinations. So it's also important to remember that this is one measure of schools, and that there are other measures or indicators beyond test scores that should be taken into account, such as parental and community engagement and student safety.
And then, Stephanie, what is your take then on the city's plan that is now before us? What are your fears? What are some of the things that you think might work out?
It's hard to say. We really think that as the district moves forward, they should keep relying on what we do know, what we've learned from other large urban districts like Chicago and Pittsburgh and New York have made these similar decisions, and move forward based on what we've seen that's worked in other places. And again, the focus should be on really supporting these displaced students so that they receive the best education possible.
So there has to be an investment along with some of the cost cutting, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Ben.
Sure.
Well, thanks, Stephanie. And I think we saw the School Reform Commission wrestling with some of those very issues last night, particularly around some of the schools that were ultimately spared. One of the schools, Paul Robeson High School in West Philadelphia, a teacher named Andrew Saltz actually got up to testify on behalf of the school, and he was unique in bringing visual aids for his presentation. And he had two signs that he placed in front of him at the table. One said 90%, and that's the graduation rate at his school where he teaches, Robeson High. And the other said 53%, and that's the graduation rate at the school, Sayre High School, that the school district had recommended students from Robeson be sent to after Robeson was closed. And again, Mr. Saltz, this teacher, said, how does this make sense? How are we going to send students from a school that appears to be working, at least on this measure, into a school that isn't? And the commissioners really wrestled with that question, ultimately, you know, going through a very confusing process of saying, can we close Robeson without sending them to Sayre? And then later saying, we just can't close Robeson right now, given these things. And so there was other examples as well. T.M. Pierce Elementary School, the elementary in North Philadelphia, where School Reform Commissioner Sylvia Sims sends her granddaughter, there were lots of questions about whether it would be safe to close that school and send children, some as young as 6, 7, 8 years old, a mile away through some very dangerous neighborhoods. And also questions about whether it made economic sense, because many of the schools would have been sent to a Renaissance charter school where the district incurs additional costs and the school is lower performing right now. And again, ultimately, the commissioners voted not to make that closure, partly due to those concerns, trying to grapple, again, with this need to downsize, the need to try and save money, but not wanting to put kids in worse positions.
Yeah, and I want to thank Stephanie Levin from Research for Action for her call to Radio Times. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. And Ben, you just brought up charter schools, and I think that's one of the big parts of this equation. You recently did a very good analysis. People can see that at newsworks.org of the numbers of one specific school. You focused in on the Strawberry Mansion School, and you looked at how many of the students living in the district were actually going to that school. What did you find?
Well, I think it was remarkable, because if you look at the neighborhood around Strawberry Mansion High School, every neighborhood school in Philadelphia has what's called a catchment area or an attendance zone. It's a geographic area, and if you live there, you're automatically assigned to go to your neighborhood school. So if you look within the attendance zone of Strawberry Mansion High School, there are about 2,000 families who send their children to public schools. Only 16.7% of those families send their kids to their neighborhood school. 83% send their kids to charter schools, to magnets, to citywide admission schools, to boutique high schools, to vocational schools, to military academies, really anywhere but Manchin. And so, you know, we really dug in and tried to focus on the process that the school district went through about trying to decide whether to close Manchin. Initially, Superintendent Height had recommended it for closure, and there was a very strong reaction from the community, from students, from parents, from people around. And what they said is, if you close this school, you're not only going to impact the 435 students who remain there, but you're going to impact the surrounding community, that the building is a hub for the community, that the community needs it to be strong, and that if you close it, there will be what they called an educational desert throughout that section of North Philadelphia. And elected officials were involved. City Council President Daryl Clark was very involved. And the district really found itself caught between the numbers, which seemed to indicate pretty clearly that the building is not viable as it was, and between the community. And there was one parent in particular, a gentleman named Frank Thorne, who I spent a lot of time talking with because he was fighting very passionately to save Manchin, but he sends his own three children to charter schools. And so trying to understand that tension and how it played out, not just at Manchin, but all around the city, I think was really central to understanding the paradox really going, you know, that has fueled this fight over the past 3 months in Philadelphia.
And I want to ask you, so here's a gentleman speaking on behalf of the school, doesn't send his own kids there. And some people were saying the fact that over 80% of students living in that zone do not go to Strawberry Mansion means success, because they now have another choice. They have another place to go. On the other hand, that has kind of delivered a death blow to the school there, because those who run will.
Over the past 15 years, Philadelphia has really seen an explosion of public school choice options. We now have well over 30 charter high schools, where there's dozens of special admission and citywide admission schools, and there really has been a concerted, concentrated effort to give parents options. And one of the groups who is relatively new to the scene in Philadelphia, but is really pushing that agenda very aggressively, is the Philadelphia School Partnership. And, you know, they've invested heavily in schools where they're trying to create better options for parents, whether that's charter schools, parochial schools, or in some cases, district schools. And, you know, I talked with the executive director of the school partnership, Philadelphia School Partnership, Mark Gleason, and he kind of cast it in supply and demand terms, said, you know, if everyone wants to drink Coke, but you only have Pepsi, don't keep making more Pepsi, make more Coke. A lot of people took umbrage to that characterization, saying, hey, choosing a school isn't choosing a soda. We have to think about this in human terms. And that conflict has really been driving a lot of this process about whether, you know, we should focus on giving parents as many options as possible, or whether we should focus on making sure each neighborhood school in the city is strong.
And I want to quote something from your reporting on Strawberry Mansion. You quote the current principal, Linda Clyde-Wayman, and she said, "We don't look at students' test scores. We don't look at their incarceration records. We don't look at their ankle bracelets that they have to charge every day in our sockets." And she was describing the fact that, you know, somebody has to serve the students that come to Strawberry Mansion.
And I think one of the things that we've seen with this explosion of public school choice options is that many, if not most of them, require parents and families to clear at least a minimal hurdle in order to get their children out of the neighborhood school and into another option. And there are many children in this city, particularly in some of the more disadvantaged neighborhoods of the city, that have trouble clearing even the minimal hurdles like that. And so what I think we've seen at a school like Manchin, as its population, overall student population, has declined by two-thirds in just 10 years, during that same period of time, the proportion of special education students in the school more than doubled, to the point where over a third of students in that school right now require specialized services. And that makes it very challenging to run an effective school, and it makes it very challenging to run a financially viable school as well. And that's what, you know, we saw with Manchin being three-quarters empty right now as well. So in the course of this process in North Philadelphia and elsewhere, we saw a lot of community-generated counterproposals, and many of them were really focused on how can we make sure that we're keeping a strong anchor institution in our community that will serve the families who need it most. And I think that's a lot of the concern that's out there about this school closings plan and about the overall direction the district is heading, of saying, how are we going to ensure that the neediest students are taken care of as well?
And there were also some critical voices who said, some of the charter schools are not performing very well. Why are we targeted to be closed because of performance, student performance, and charter schools are getting renewed and expanded when they are not doing all that well either?
And, you know, again, I think as emotional and kind of all-consuming as this school closing process has been over the past 3 months, it's important to remember that this is part of a larger direction in which the district is heading. Part of that is financial. As Superintendent Height told us, it's not just about saving money next year, which will be the minimum, but saving money over 5 years and beyond. But academically, and thinking about how schools, how public education in Philadelphia actually works, this is just one part of a larger plan as well. And, you know, district leaders running from, the Superintendent Height to the School Reform Commission to the mayor have been very clear that they want to move towards what they call a portfolio of school options. So that might not mean that every neighborhood has a neighborhood school, but the hope is that every neighborhood will have some options that parents are able to choose from among. The challenge in district schools and in charter schools is making sure that those schools are actually good.
Yeah. Let's have Lewis join us from Elmer, New Jersey. Hi, Lewis. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. I want to start off by saying that I am an educator here in southern New Jersey. I teach in a inner city school. We have, like you in Philadelphia, of course, budget cuts, and I don't want to paint with too broad of a brush, but there's a major component that all school boards are missing. The success of a school starts at home, and we need, as educators and school districts, in the restructuring plan to put some type of component to where parents who are ill-prepared to foster a good learning environment at home, to have a way to come and gain some knowledge so they can assist their children at any grade level in their homework, in structuring. If they don't know themselves how to, you know, have a child be prepared for school, we can assist them. We can guide them. You know, a structured environment, in regardless of what area you're living, to have a place to do homework, have a place to ask questions, and, you know, a safe environment, this is where we need to start for our schools to be successful. Second point, money will continue to be tight over the next decade. Yes, there are hard decisions to cut and close schools, schools that are deteriorated, schools that need, you know, to be rebuilt. But educators need the support through this transition period to have the parents and community outreach programs work with us so that children can be more successful from kindergarten through graduation. And you will see higher graduation rates and more success stories at schools.
Lewis, let me ask you before you go, have you seen a school where there have been successful initiatives to bring parents in, to prepare the parents along with the students? Have you seen any of that work being done?
Not yet. And as I'm speaking to you on the phone, I have gone to school districts and many of our communities here in South Jersey with this same message. I can only hope that people who make the decisions hear it loud and clear and maybe start, you know, a fundamental, you know, change in how we educate our children and how we bring the family component, whether it be a single parent, a grandparent, a foster family. We need to help our children succeed, and it starts at home. And we as educators build upon that foundation so that the success is a child who graduates and hopefully goes on to additional learning, whether it be vocational or on to college.
All right, Lewis, thank you so much for your call. And we have a break coming up, but Ben, just a very quick reaction.
Thanks, Lewis, for the call. And I think you raise a good point that I think most everyone would agree that one of the key elements of making a successful school is having a strong relationship between that school and parents in the surrounding community. And again, I think this question of in Philadelphia with these school closings that were approved yesterday, you know, one of the concerns is that there's already a fragile district, a fragile relationship between the district and many of its parents. And will this make it worse because of things like safety?
Yeah, that's WHYY's education reporter, Ben Harold. He will stay with us. And we also will have Lori Shore, Mayor Nutter's Chief Education Officer, joining us here on Radio Times, and more of your phone calls at 1-888-477-9499. You're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY.
Is your child struggling in school? Supporting WHYY, Delaware Valley Friends, a Quaker College preparatory school in Paoli for students who learn differently.
Delaware Valley Friends is committed to providing small classes, individual attention, state-of-the-art technology, and an accredited curriculum and faculty for grades 6 through 12. Open house on Sunday, March 10th from 1 to 3 p.m. More information about Delaware Valley Friends at dvfs.org. Registration now open for summer reading and writing program.
I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Weather-related disasters and insurance. Are homeowners ready when earthquakes or major storms like Sandy strike? An expert in risk says no. Also, the Oscar-nominated documentary on AIDS activists who help change medicine. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Delaware Theater Company supports WHYY and presents Love, Loss, and What I Wore, an intimate collection of stories by Nora and Delia Ephron, now through March 17th. A show about matters of the heart and matters of the closet, this show uses clothing, accessories, and the memories they trigger to tell funny and often poignant stories to which all women can relate. Starring Sabrina LaBeouf, Sonia Manzano, Karen Quackenbush, Erica Watson, and Don Wells. 302-594-1100 or DelawareTheater.org.
And welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moscowane. We're talking about Philadelphia public schools scheduled to be closed. 23 of them, 5 more have been voted on to be merged or relocated. In studio with us is WHYY's education reporter Benjamin Harold. He's been covering this for quite some time for WHYY, for Newsworks.org, and for our partnership with the Public School Notebook. So he's been filling us in on what's been happening. We're also joined now by Lori Shore. She is Mayor Nutter's Chief Education Officer and Director of the Office of the Public School and Family Child Advocate. Lori, thank you so much for joining us here on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
And I want to hear a cut. Our WHYY reporter Elizabeth Fiedler was out early this morning. She visited several of the schools that were voted last night to be closed. And here she spoke with 8-year-old Damir Edwards, and he was very upset that his school, Pratt Elementary, will be closing. Let's hear what he had to say.
This is the only good school that I could get into because if this school closed down, I'm going to have to go to 2 bad schools where bad people go.
Bad people. You hear that, and I think it gets to the heart of what a lot of parents and a lot of kids are scared about. Where are we going to go, and what's it like there? Lori, how will you work with parents and kids through those fears?
Well, I've got to say that some of the most compelling testimony we heard through these long months has been from parents and kids about the level of fear they have about the change, but also about the walk to and from school. I think I'm actually pleased to hear that this little fella is concerned about not going to a good school, and that's the thing that, you know, we're really trying to change the conversation to around high-performing schools and making sure that kids are going to high-performing schools. I think the votes that happened last night, there were some that were on the table at in the original recommendations where we would have been sending kids to lower-performing schools, and those all were taken off the slate that was voted last night, and I feel good about that. But I, as a public school parent for 13 years, I certainly hear the fear, and I think my first meeting this morning was on Safe Corridors program. Now that we know which schools are closing, how we can expand that program, and how we can make sure that there are safe walkways for kids to the new schools that they're going to. So I hear that, and it weighs heavily on us here in the city.
Hi, Lori. This is Ben Harrell, the education reporter here at WHYY. And, you know, I was at the meeting last night, and I thought one of the more interesting exchanges was between School Reform Commission Chairman Pedro Ramos and two members of City Council, Councilwoman Janie Blackwell and Councilman Curtis Jones. And what they started to talk about was whose responsibility it really is to ensure that those transitions from home to school and back are safe for kids. Chairman Ramos seemed to indicate that he felt that, you know, maybe the district can't do that on its own. It can't prevent drug corners from being dangerous. It can't prevent everything that happens in some of these neighborhoods, and that really it might be on the city to step up to the plate to help out with those things. What can the city do, and what has the city already been trying to do to help make sure that all of the burden of these closings doesn't fall on the district alone?
Well, I think that it definitely is a citywide effort. I know that the way that the state does the persistently dangerous schools includes incidents to and from school, but, you know, and they hold the district responsible for that, but I think that that's an unfair measure. I don't think that anybody believes that a principal can make sure that when a kid walks out their door and walks two blocks from their home, if there's, you know, I think that as a city we have to own that, both in a big C city way and a little C city way. So we've actually had conversations starting about 2 months ago on if schools were to close, how we would make sure that some of the city services that we have in those schools transfer, but more importantly, the safety concerns and looking at those routes and increasing the city's volunteer efforts, which are substantial, but and other work with the police department on drug corners and things like that. So, I think it's going to have to be a whole city effort.
And given that it's going to need to be a city effort to make sure that this is safe, and obviously this is going to be one of the more traumatic things that has happened for Philadelphians in quite some time, a lot of people have questioned why the mayor has been so quiet on this issue of school closures. Why haven't we heard more from him in public, either supporting the district's plan, as he has on a few occasions, or in kind of talking about, you know, some of the challenges associated with it?
Yeah. I guess I'd have to disagree with you, Ben, on how you're characterizing him. The day the school closure announcements were made by Dr. Height, he did a press conference in the hallway of City Hall with Height on one side of him, me on the other side. I'm not sure whether the public school notebook was able to be there that day, but he did a 20-minute speech on it and his commitment to the school closures as an important part of trying to right-size the infrastructure we have in the city right now. I mean, right now we're paying for two whole different infrastructures with taxpayers' dollars. So the mayor from the beginning, I mean, if we remember back, former Superintendent Arlene Ackerman had the right-sizing plan in her Imagine 2014 strategic plan back in 2009. And since that time, we've been talking about the need to do this. So the mayor has been strong on this, and you know, we put a website up on the city webpage where all the closures were, with the, you know, all sort of information. So I don't think he has been quiet.
Okay, Lori, let's see if we can fit some of these phone calls in. People have been waiting patiently. We have Christian joining us, and he is a recent graduate of University City High. Hi, Christian. Thank you for calling into Radio Times.
Hello. How you doing?
Good. Thank you. Thanks for calling.
Oh, yeah. I really wanted to speak upon the situation. Like, I feel really, really grotesque about the situation. Like, I feel as though that the school I came from has really benefited every, like, person, everybody in the society, really. Because this school has brought a lot to the society. We're, like, University City High School, we are really, like, culture-based. Like, we're really society-based. We really love to interact with the society. Like, this school, before I came to this school, I used to go to Alani High School. And that's one of the schools that I think is, like, think are staying open. And I feel as though it shouldn't be that way. Like, Alani is completely different than Uni. Like, Uni, it grew me up to become a man. And it taught me certain lessons that I really thought that I would never learn. It taught me, like, lessons about society, about life.
Period. All right.
So, I mean,
Christian, thank you so much. I want to give Ben a chance to weigh in because he's seen a lot of testimony from people from your school, University City High.
And actually, Christian, if I may, I had a question for you. I'd be curious to hear from your perspective. What do you think the students who are at University City High now, what are the things that they're thinking about today as they realize that their school will be closed next year and they have to think about where they're going to be next year? What are some of the challenges and questions going through teenagers' minds right now at the high schools in the city?
Thank you. Actually, really, right now, I'm at my school, my current school, University City High School. And as I'm walking through the hallways, everybody seems pretty down about the situation. Counselors, students, everybody. I feel as though it's really a down, like, it's really like a down, how can I say this? I don't know. But it just feels as though everybody is really not into the school no more, just knowing that After this year, like, everything is over. Like, everything that they did at the school will never be really remembered like that.
All right.
I feel like this school really, I'm sorry.
No, sorry, Christian. I want to give Lori a chance to weigh in. We've hit upon this earlier with the superintendent, but I guess one of the big challenges is to keep learning going at the schools that are scheduled for closing. And Christian, thank you so much for giving us your perspective. Lori?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're going to have an issue with that from now until the end of the spring, and I think that parents can play a key role there to assure their students that that learning still is the number one priority for them. I'm hopeful that teachers will be reinforcing that message inside schools. We have wonderful teachers, and I feel that, you know, they're up to that task. I know this is going to be hardest on our students. They're the youngest folks that are being impacted by this, and I think the adults in their lives, whether it's at school, at home, at church, have to help them keep their eyes on what school's about. You know, it's not about a building, it's not about a program, it's about them interacting with, you know, their curriculum, with their teachers, with their peers, pushing themselves, and I think the adults that are in students' lives are going to have to really double down their efforts until students get transitioned into their new schools.
And Lori, speaking of teachers, what will happen to the teachers who teach at the schools that are scheduled to be closed?
So the teachers at schools have a right to follow their students to where their students go. This is all in the collective bargaining agreement, and I don't want to get too deeply into that, but that is the sort of the most general way of talking about it. But seniority will also play in there in terms of who gets bumped into other schools when those new teachers come in and follow the students. So there will be some rearranging of teaching forces inside schools in the fall.
Ben, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, and I think one of the things that we've seen in the build-up to last night's vote and now thinking about all of the changes that are going to happen so quickly is kind of a focusing in on the details and the nuts and bolts. But, Lori, I wanted to ask you, can you articulate for our listeners, what is the vision behind this? Why go through, I mean, obviously there's a financial component to it, but in terms of thinking about how public education works in the city, what's the benefit of going through this very painful process? What are we hoping results, either in the short term or long term, in terms of how the city delivers public education?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, you're hitting on the big, big issue, which is we are going through a massive shift in the city, as other cities are, but I think Philadelphia more than a lot of the other cities, that we no longer have a one provider of public education in our city, which is what we used to have. And then you could sort of manage inside that system. We now have, instead of one major public education provider, we have 80-some, right? So we have these charter schools, which are their own, they're autonomous, and I think at the end of the day, last night was part of a rearranging of some of the big, big pieces of the infrastructure of education in the city so that we can have more money ultimately going to books, classrooms, and not necessarily to big buildings that have outlived their usefulness and have become a drag on the district's budget. And I think it's a movement forward. Right. I think we still have to do a little bit more working together on what that vision is going to look like because nobody's been through this before.
Let's get another call in. We have Beth joining us from West Philadelphia. Hi, Beth. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a homeowner in West Philadelphia and the very, very proud parent of a guy who's now quite an adult but went through two Philadelphia public schools, a neighborhood school and a magnet school. And I'm curious, I haven't heard, unless I've missed it, I haven't heard anybody talk or write about the confluence of the downsizing of the school district and the upsizing of our property taxes. And I want to know who's going to hold everybody accountable for how these new property taxes are going to be spent. We fund public schools, and I'm not one of those middle-aged or mature people who says, I paid for schools, my kids are out, I don't care. I very much care what happens to the public schools.
Okay.
And while I understand the heartbreak that people feel about some of their neighborhood schools closing, I think it's a fair expectation for those of us who pay for the system to say, you have to spend our money more thoughtfully and more carefully.
All right,
so
Beth,
happens now?
Good question, Beth, and thank you for your call. We're coming up toward the end of the hour, so Lori, what's the answer there? Taxes are going up for a lot of us.
They are, and I think we've increased property taxes the last 2 years in this city to support schools, while the state has been ratcheting down its support of public schools, and quite frankly, I think that is the issue we should be putting our attention on, but I know that's not what our conversation is about today, but I agree with the caller. There has to be, for the property taxes that do go into the school district, there has to be transparency and openness about how that money is spent. And we, 2 years ago, started to post on our website here at the city lists of contractors that the district does work with. So there's a lot of more transparency there. There needs to be more. There has to be accountability. I pay my taxes. They go into this system. I don't want to be double paying for kids' education, but I want to pay for good education. And that's what we as citizens should be demanding and making sure is happening.
Quick question for you, Lori. The relationship between parents and the school district has been troubled and difficult. This has not helped. How do you see the relationship healing and then moving forward toward a better future for all public school kids in the city?
Well, I think, you're going to have students now moving into receiving schools, and they will mimic what they see happens with their parents. So parents who work together from schools that have closed, working with parents who are in schools that have been are places that students are going to, when parents work together, students will mimic that behavior. I'm just hoping that we can make it possible for those conversations to happen. I hope the district can figure a way to have those conversations and meetings and get-togethers happen. And in the long run, every school in this city should have a school advisory council, which is made up of community and parent members and teachers, that at a very local and specific way, people can be involved in their schools. The district is the district. It sits at 440. But what happens at a school, parents, community members, and teachers need to work together to make sure kids keep their eyes on what's important.
All right. And Ben Harold, going forward, you've been covering this all along. As this process begins to now actually happen, what are some things that you will pay attention to and that we as Philadelphia citizens should be paying attention to?
I think one of the big challenges, Mike, and for both Philadelphia citizens, for us in the media, and for the school district is going to be to make sure that we're keeping our focus on what happens to these students in schools as the next big issue comes up, which is going to be the teacher's contract.
All right, that's Benjamin Harold. He is WHYY's education reporter. You can hear him on our air, obviously, and also read his reports and look at some amazing graphics at newsworks.org. We also have a partnership with the Public School Notebook and have been working very hard. And thank you, Ben, for all your great coverage. We also heard from Lori Shore, Mayor Nutter's Chief Education Officer and Director of the Office of the Public School Family and Child Advocate. And earlier on, we were joined by William Hyde Jr., Superintendent of the Philadelphia School District. And I want to thank all of our callers who joined us. You've been listening to Radio Times here on WHYY, and I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moskowain today. Thank you again for listening.